Welcome to the Solo BG Podcast. In this podcast, we talk about solo and cooperative games. We also bring you news, audio unboxings, Kickstarter updates, and interviews with amazing personalities around the industry. We hope you enjoy this episode. And now, here's your host, Derek Rodriguez.
Hello, my friends. Welcome to another episode of Solo BG Podcast. Derek here. This is a unique one, as you could read on the title of the episode, episode 110, and I'm just going to jump on it. If this is your first time in the podcast, remember that here we talk about solo board games, and sometimes we go into competitive mode once a month. Just really quick before I introduce our guest, which I'm a huge fan, and you will hear me all about it all during the episode, I want to recognize the top places that they listened to the last episode, either countries and cities, just like we did on the previous one. It's becoming a tradition now. United States, United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, Spain, Germany, Sweden, Philippines, Netherlands, and Singapore. And the top cities that listened to the last episode, Madrid, Sydney, Dayton, Ohio, Melbourne, Victoria, Charlotte, North Carolina, Perth, Western Australia, Calgary, Alberta, Franklin, Massachusetts, Round Rock, Texas, and Leatherhead, Surrey. Thank you so much. That's my way to interact with you, since, as we have talked in the past, unfortunately, on the podcast mode, it's harder to interact with all of you amazing people, just that if you were doing it on a YouTube channel. But this is my way to say thank you, and also to interact with you. And if you want to send me a private message, you can do it at solobgpodcast@gmail.com, on through our social media at solobgpodcast, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And now, I'm very excited. Let me take a deep breath, because the guest that we have for today's episode, or tonight, or this evening, depending on where you're listening to and at what time it is and what are you doing, I'm a huge fan. I will say it right off the bat. And I have mentioned this in the past that, you know, it was a little bit of lucky and a little bit of destiny how I became a solo gamer. And of course, part of it, I have to say thanks to my friend Caleb Wiles, which he introduced me to the solo board game aspect when I was doing just a Star Wars X-Wing and more like a miniature war games. But then he handed me a copy of Pathfinder, the card game, and I was like, okay, I have no idea how to play solo. I was still living in a small apartment here in Indianapolis, and I was like, okay, well, let me give it a try. And then I was just reading the rules, and it was too much for me to comprehend terminology-wise. You know, it's just chaotic, hectic for me at that time. So what did I did? Like most of our people, we do when we're trying to do something, either I do it on your own or something like that, you always go to YouTube, right? So I went to YouTube and I started like Pathfinder, the card game, solo. And then I found a video from a British guy, and he starts right off the bat explaining you, like almost like a classroom on a board, telling you the difference between an RPG game and then a card game and a deck building game. Now, this has been many years ago, so that's what it brings to my memory, right? So I was like, wow. Like, he was explaining like a master's degree kind of like thing before you jump in, and with a very nice, smooth voice, and, you know, trying to get you in the mood for the adventure. Then after that, he started to teach you the game. And not only teaching you the game, he starts to play the game. And not only playing the game, he's making the game living. You know, he's getting himself into the roles of the characters. And this guy wants to go here, he wants to go there. And oh my God, it's going to end up bad for him and all that stuff. And after that, the rest is history. I started to get games, I started to play games, started to get a gaming table, and I start to immerse myself into solo board gaming and then the podcast and all that stuff. I wanted to tell you this whole context of history because that person is the great guy that I have in front of me right now through technology, through camera. He's in Great Britain right now, in England. I'm in US, Indianapolis, and we are here talking to each other about board games. Ricky Royal. Also, well, I should say Richard Wilkins, a.k.a. Ricky Royal, welcome to Solo BG Podcast. I'm very happy and very excited to have you here with us.
what an introduction.
I know, right?
You stopped.
Yeah, it's been great. How are you doing?
Thanks for having me on. 110 episodes, well done, that's amazing.
Yeah, we're still going, you know, and it's just as a part of also the hobby, which, by the way, I mean, we're going to talk about this. We're going to talk about your channel. We're going to talk about one of your games that is currently on late pledge mode. It was recently a successful Kickstarter campaign. It's now and currently onto late pledge. We're going to talk about a little bit about that as well and your projects. But I want to start right off the bat. I want you to tell us, Richard or Ricky, I guess, how do your family call you? Do they call you Richie or Rick or Richard or Ricky? How do they call you?
My mum calls me Richard, but you can call me Ricky. Yeah, that's great.
Ricky, okay. Yeah. So,
my mom calls me all sorts of other things, but we won't talk about that today.
Well, okay. So Ricky, I know, amazing listeners, I know you're thinking right now, Derek, we all know Ricky. Okay, cool. But I still want to know, you know, probably things that we haven't heard or things like that. So I want to give you the opportunity, Ricky, to, once again, you don't need any introduction, but tell us about yourself. Tell us about, take us back to the beginning, to the very, 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 very beginning, where you probably weren't even on the hobby, or when did you start on the hobby, and how this all snowball ended up until right now.
Okay, well, yeah, well, you mentioned the YouTube channel, so that's kind of, I guess, where this little hobby became an all life encompassing thing. So yeah, it's kind of taken over a big part of my life now. I didn't imagine it would be the case. I started, like you, I was interested in watching some YouTube videos, and I watched a guy called Rodney Smith, who was playing a game with his son. I think it was Mansions of Madness.
Mm-hmm.
And then another chap called Robert, who did Black Belt Gaming, and he was playing Gears of War. And I hadn't seen these kind of games before. You know, I was, like most people, I played abstract games like chess and drafts and family games and so on and so on. So they kind of drew me in to their storytelling, and that was a big part of it. And also the making of the films. And it was it was April 2012 I posted my first video. So I've just hit my 10-year anniversary. I'm going into my 11th season of doing it.
Wow, congrats.
I know. Yeah. I know. And you know what? It's been a kind of a timely 10 years, I suppose. In those last 10 years, really have seen the hobby explode, especially in the world of solo gaming.
Sure.
And when you're in front of a camera on your own, solo gaming is you know, an ideal media for an ideal subject for showing on the media film, and that's what those guys were doing, and I started doing too. And like you mentioned, the Pathfinder thing. Oh my gosh, I remember that. I don't think I've pulled out a brown piece of paper and a felt tip pen again. Maybe I should do that.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
But it was trying to explore mechanisms. These were kinds of games that I'd never played before. I played Dungeons and Dragons when I was a teenage boy. I grew up with chess, and that was a passion and still is. And happened to be something I was quite good at, so I kind of held on to it. And playing card games like cribbage with my dad and chess with my grandfather, they were things that always had good experiences for me, and I held on to that in my life. And I didn't know that solo gaming was a thing, but to be fair, I was interested in exploring the mechanisms of those kind of games, and those guys taught me that through YouTube. Like I was trying to teach you through the Pathfinder thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, things like deck building. What the heck? When I first found Dominium and heard, I was like, "What? You can buy more silver and gold, and you can change it." It was just things like that blew my mind, I guess I wanted to explore the mechanisms of games and doing it through the YouTube. But there weren't many people doing it around that time. I think Robert from Black Belt Gaming was probably the first who sat down and showed a solo playthrough, and now it's wonderful because so many people are showing off games, and you know, like guys like yourself flying the flag for solo gaming and letting people realize what we still get a bad rap as solo gamers.
But
like, where's your friends? But do you know what? it's a different kind of hobby, you know. A different kind of thing. It's a great thing to do, and I love teaching people and showing people just what wonderful stories that solo games can play as an alternative to TV and video games. You know, I work at a computer every day, so to get away from the screen, although I'm also editing films, so I don't get away from the screen. Get away from the screen is great. And also, actually, you know, I don't produce lots of films like lots of YouTube guys do now, because I enjoy spending more time at the table just playing when I can. So,
yeah, I can definitely tell that, because, you know, for a little bit when I started the podcast, I was also taking in consideration the possibility of doing some video content. But when I realized, you know, the effort and the time consuming that it is, at least right now in my life, I mean, I couldn't do it, you know, because of my profession and I work in healthcare, I'm sorry, and you know, and you know, the time that I have, I either want to spend it with my wife or playing games or attending to, you know, other hobbies like sports events or music or something like that. So it's kind of like the YouTube definitely takes a big chunk of, you know, it seems like you're telling us, and when I talk to other, you know, amazing creators such as, like, I don't know, Michael Kelly from One Stop Cop Shop, or when I have talked to Adam Smith from Rolling Solo, you know, it seems like the whole video part of it, editing, it's always a big chunk of time. So it's completely understandable what you were mentioning now. Do you have a group of friends that you play with, or you just literally just play solo?
No, I do. Not regularly, since COVID and everything else, it's mm-hmm. always been extremely difficult, but I don't particularly enjoy playing remotely. So during that time, I didn't play with anyone, but, yeah, there's different folks that I go and play games with. It's been too long, so, yeah. but unfortunately not too local. So wherever I go, I have to kind of drive or make a journey. But
oh, I see.
So yeah, so it's not something that's as accessible to me as a lot of other folks. You know, like yourself, I've got a family and they take up a lot of my time as well.
Sure.
So it tends to be, you know, those sleepy midnight hours when I'm finding time to just do my little hobbies. It's funny because when I started doing my first videos, people were like, you're kind of talking in hushed tones on your video. And it's like, you know, I don't want to wake the baby up. So it's kind of like that.
Sure.
So it is kind of that. But no, I love getting together with people and playing.
Now, so I'm assuming the baby is 12 now, or around 10 or 12.
Yeah, exactly. Playing with other people is a wonderful thing to do, like I said, and that was the memory from growing up, is playing with my family.
Mm-hmm.
Playing with my daughter now is good. Although she's not 12, she's 14 now, actually.
Okay.
Trying to rope her into playing is not as easy as it was.
Okay.
She's discovered the mirror, mostly, I think, is where she spends most of her time.
Sure.
And my son's the same, you know, they go off and I have to find new people. But sure. No, I tend to play with other designers, which is always good as well, because you can share ideas. Although we do probably spend too much time after game just talking about what we've done, but what we've changed and all that kind of stuff.
But that, you know, that's part of the hobby too. I think, like, you know, sometimes when I have guests and you know, or when I'm talking just to people also on the Spanish version of the podcast, you know, every time that I brought guests, sometimes we were talking about so many other things rather than the board game per se, right? Or a particular board game. But I found out, Ricky, that's also a big part of the hobby per se again, because I consume a bunch of podcasts out there, and I found it very interesting, you know, just hearing, talking about, you know, when the content creators take their time to talk about something else on their lives and stuff, I think it all relates in a certain way, and it's always appealing to hear those stories and the whys, probably, that sometimes we as a listeners or as a viewers on a YouTube channel, we don't see, right, when we're just trying to focus on the game, which I also wanted to ask you, you know, since you're mainly a solo game. By the way, the hush voice that you were mentioning, I think it's perfect. I think it set up the mood, because another two videos that come to my mind right now, when I was starting still in my apartment, I remember, I think it was a series of four or five videos of Arkham Horror First Edition, I think it was. And one of the things that I enjoyed from those videos were that I remember when I got the game, I was like, okay, I don't know how to... I mean, and I got the idea how to play it, but I don't know per se the exact rules. But because my attention was more focused on your story, the story that you were telling about the characters, how they're going to go through the gates and this and that, and oh, they're going to face this guy and this god and this and that. But the voice that you were making, the way that you were making it seems like that storytelling part, I think is great. So don't change that hush voice. Even if your kids are 20 now or whatever, I mean, just keep the hush voice. Picture that you have a baby on the other room, in that way you keep doing it. Do you have any particular ritual when you play solo games? Like, I will tell you an example. By ritual, I mean, when I play solo, I'm a huge music fan, audio fan, which we'll talk about a little bit about the guitar and the turntable that you have behind you. But anyway, so what I do is if I'm playing a survival game or even like a World War game or something like that, I have my different playlists on Spotify, advertising, sorry, but I have my playlist there. And you know, I just set up the music. I try to dim the light as much as I can on my game room. And I just, you know, have the game on the table and I start to let my imagination go with the game. Regardless of the mechanic, I don't care if it's a dungeon crawler, deck building, whatever it is, or a solid Euro, I still have to have music and the atmosphere that will make me kind of like role play and interact better in my mind with the game. Do you have any particular ritual, or you just go, if you're not recording, you just go silence?
Yes, I do. I don't tend to have music and things. I find I like to kind of switch off the different senses and treat solo gaming as a way to kind of meditate, I guess, a little bit and rest my mind and senses from different things. It's funny, everyone finds the experience different for them. I mean, we've talked about the storytelling. For me, that's a big part of it. And I'm happy to go really slowly with the game that's playing solo. I mean, solo gaming and multiplayer gaming are two very, very different experiences. And it's a strange thing because they're presented in the same media. It's the same pieces of cardboard. It's the same plastic. It's the same box. It's the same tokens. But they're delivering a very different personal experience for multiplayer gaming. They're a platform for engaging socially with one another, which is particularly useful for people who struggle in social situations, for example, or people who need an excuse to get together, mm-hmm. Or people who like to be competitive. I mean, I'm terribly competitive at things like chess, but chess won't tell a story like a solo game will tell a story. So for me, it's all about just spending time. I'm a very tactile person. You know, I kind of given up computer games a long time ago because board gaming gives me that different experience. And it's where just time where I can just be, you know, with my thoughts, with myself, just, you know, even just reading the rule back and setting up. Sometimes that's enough. And then tomorrow I'll come back. You know, I'm lucky I've got a space here where I can do that. Mm-hmm. It's that kind of switching off kind of experience. And when I don't want to be, you know what, I spend most of my day just talking with people and interacting with people. It's what I do constantly. Mm-hmm. And if you're a bit of an introvert, which you know a lot of us are, you need that time to just disconnect from other people for a while and recharge and get ready again for that, you know, communicating again. So this is just a great way for me to switch off for a while. And I think that's probably one of the, you know, I said at the beginning, you know, our solo gamers jokingly, half jokingly, we still get a bad rap. It's because multiplayer gaming and solo gaming are different things. We don't have to understand each other because they're different mediums, you know. It's just because it's presented to you in the same format. That's my take on it. And that's kind of how I approach solo gaming as a designer, is that you've got to understand that the game's got to deliver a different experience. I mean, a multiplayer game's got to deliver a platform for people to interact with each other. A solo game has got to tell you a story or present you with a puzzle. Yeah. So it's they're two different kind of let's say genres, if you like, of entertainment.
So
I like your ritual. I like that you. So what sort of music do you? Do you find works best for you?
Well, it, like I said, it just depends on the type of games. But for example, one of my favorite soundtracks, it's from Hans Zimmer's Interstellar, for the movie Interstellar. So okay. I love to play that if I'm playing some sort of like space. Anything that has space, I will play Interstellar. I don't care if it's about diplomacy or whatever. I will still play Interstellar. Inception, you know, usually the music from Hans Zimmer. Some stuff from John Williams that is not Star Wars related. From Michael Giacchino as well. He has some cool soundtracks. Of course, you have Bill Conti as well. He has very good soundtracks. I really forgot the guy that always worked with Tim Burton films. Danny Elfman. Danny Elfman has a great, you know, soundtracks as well. So that's where I try to, you know, let my mind go into. It's very rare that I play any music that it's with lyrics per se when I'm playing. It's usually more about, you know, the soundtrack aspect of it. I also create a board game soundtrack playlist, which is based on basically all the old NES and SNES or Super Nintendo, First Nintendo games, some of the Sega Genesis as well. But instead of being in an 8-bit mode, they're more like remade by some great artists, like either in a rock version or more like a jazz version of it and whatever. Some with a bunch of synthesizers around. So I like to play those soundtracks as well if I'm playing something more fun or more fast-paced, right? But if I'm going to let myself immerse, I don't know, let's say with a Cthulhu game, we were talking about Arkham Horror, Mansions of Madness, I usually also try to find shows that I enjoy to watch. For example, Dark on Netflix, which is a sci-fi dark horror-ish show. The soundtrack is beautiful, and I like to play the music, and it really set me in the mood of like, okay, like let's go, kind of like with your harsh voice. Let's go slow pace and let's think. And oh, I don't want this guy to die, and you know, and this and that. So that's kind of my disconnection from the rest of the world. Once again, I spend a bunch of time in the hospital, you know, doing some other stuff. So that's my time as well to disconnect. But I don't want to take another way in the interview, because here you are the star, my friend. So we talk about, you know, the preferences. Do you have any preference, by the way, as far as mechanic? You were talking about the storytelling aspect of a solo gaming. Now, talking specifically for solo gaming, do you think there's some mechanics that they work well? And do you think there's some other mechanics that they don't? And what will be your favorite mechanic?
Oh, wow. I think one of the, well, I'd already mentioned deck building is something that kind of showed me something I didn't know existed. So that's, and deck building tends to be something that I find very interesting because it creates a game where the tools that you're using to you know, take your actions are very different from game to game. So I think deck building is a wonderful genre, and we've seen the explosion of deck building since Dominion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think storytelling too. I mean, what you're saying about using a soundtrack, I mean, you're saving the designers a heck of a lot of work, you know, there, Jack, because what's difficult in the board game medium is trying to touch people's emotions and bring out, I mean, that's something in solo gaming you're trying to do, is, you know, things like how do you get people to feel fear or empathy, or, you know, all those things that movies and music and novels do. How can you get that out of a board game? So yeah, putting your soundtrack on is a great, you're helping the designer out big time. Maybe designers should put those in the beginning. You know, these are some recommended soundtracks. I'm sure people have done that already. but any mechanism that can do that, it's very hard. As when you start to design stuff, you kind of see games in a different way. And I guess I've kind of lost that naivety, if you like. Maybe it's that, I don't know, but you kind of start to pull things apart. Sometimes I wish I didn't, and I didn't see the mechanisms, but rather just played the game. But yeah, I like cards in games for sure, because you can do so much with them. Multi-use cards are really good, and that's something I like to see. Mm-hmm. In games, things that put layer upon layer upon layer, the games that present a simple set of mechanisms that can be used in a multitude of devious ways are great, because it makes you feel like you're creating novelties when you play, right? Okay. As a solo gamer, you get those aha moments and those, mm-hmm. Oh, I've made a combo, that's brilliant. And it makes you feel clever, right?
Sure.
I like to be made to feel clever by a designer. So, yeah, I like all those kind of stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So, you know, talking about we talk already about the origins of everything, and you as a solo gamer, you know, why the videos with the fantastic voice, why this, why that. Now we talk about that we are about to kick in on the 11th season, I think you mentioned, of the Box of Delights or the YouTube, yeah, channel, which, by the way, I want to take this opportunity right now. If you haven't followed Box of Delights or subscribe to Box of Delights either on YouTube or follow him on Facebook. I don't know if you have Instagram or only Facebook, but please do. Please just search for Box of Delights, and that will throw you directly at Ricky Royal as well. You can subscribe to his content as well through Board Game Geek, of course. He's there. And just to go now into the gaming design mode of it, and you know, talk about some games, Ricky. So I'm going to go through your history and tell me if I'm wrong or if I'm missing anything. You are a UK, of course. We talk about you're in England, UK game designer, and I'm more than a YouTuber. I hate the term YouTuber. I think you're more like a true solo board gaming influencer, because you have influence in so many people's life and hobby, just as you did, you know, with myself. You know, you have work in the board game Mentis, and Renegade, of course, which is your game by Victory Points game. I believe it was the distributor or the publisher, which I had opportunity to play it once only in a friend's house, and I just regret myself too much of not owning that game. But I will get it, I'm sure. Also, Pax Pamir, second edition, designer for the Solar Rules, Birds of Feather, which we're going to talk about it in a little bit, because it's on Leadbridge right now, the Solar Rules as well. John Company, second edition, Guilds of London, Hoplomachus, which is Family Ruins, I'm sorry, co-designer on the Solar Rules. Pax Pamir, first edition, Tales of the Northlands as well, the Sagas of Nogging the Nog, designer for the Solar Rules. Sam Bessy, a photo journalist rules. Ninja and Pinta assisted with the Solar Rules, and Steam Donkey assisted with the Solar Rules. Any award in 2018 for the strategy game, and the Solar Source, which is a podcast that I really enjoy and I will highly recommend as well to follow, they give you the stamp of approval. So that's what I can, what I could find out on your your career so far. Did I miss anything?
I don't know. I think you threw in a few that I can't remember. So.
Okay. Well, that's good. So I want to take this opportunity to now, like I said, jump into games, and I want to talk about a beautiful game I see on the background of your office or your gaming area where you're at right now, that you have a bunch of beautiful frames, you know, with some butterflies, some birds, it seems like, you know, by the guitar and turntable. And, you know, that brings us to the first game that we're going to talk about. We're going to talk, of course, about your future projects as well, or upcoming projects. Birds of a Feather, Western North America. That's a successful Kickstarter that it was just finished, you know, on the crowdfunding. And it's basically, you know, the concept is to grab your birding journal and it's time to see some birds, you know, and go from there. And it's a card game that is 1 to 7 players that right now it's currently on Late Pledge. So if you go to the Kickstarter website, you can go to Late Pledge and you know, fill it up out there, and that way they can send you the invite for when the pledge manager will be you know, live. But it's definitely a game that I think we still have the chance, and our listeners still have the chance to get it on their hands. So why don't you talk about a little bit about Birds of a Feather, Ricky, and that way we can get the sense of what we're going into.
Yeah, so this is an older the first edition was I think around 2015.
Okay.
Maybe a little later, I can't remember. So this is a re-release from publisher Snow Bright Studio, over there in the US. It's designed by Till Fristo, and it's got some wonderful bird art by Trevor Fristo and Cool Color. And it's a very one of those light games that everyone can bring to the table. Is a great game for groups of people. It plays up to 7. I love games that, although I like, you know, deep strategy games like Mage Knight that take hours and so on, mm-hmm. I also like meditative games where you can sit and just relax to and have fun with, and they create a wonderful, calm atmosphere. Games like Cascadia, which was Birds of a Feather, re-release from Snow Bright Studio, is that kind of game. So it's got a subtitle, Western North America. Now it was originally Birds of a Feather, and they put the subtitle, so that kind of feels like a bit of a teaser that there might be subsequent versions, but it's Western North America. It's a set collecting game, fundamentally. In the multiplayer game, you're all dealt a giant hand of cards that you'll then take turns. The cards are kind of dual purpose. They represent habitats that you'll go and visit, and then at the same time the birds that you might see in those habitats. So if in the multiplayer game you'll be playing a card and saying, right, I'm going to go and visit the wetlands or the shoreline or the woodlands. So you play your card, and then other people will be doing the same. And then anyone who plays cards in the same habitat, you'll be spotting the birds that are on those cards in other people's habitat. And the idea is you've got to kind of cross off each of the different birds that you can see in those different environments and kind of collect the sets, mm-hmm. And then score points. So it's that kind of experience. And then the solo game, it kind of feels, you know, kind of like a bit like the patience games that you can play with a 52-card deck. Mm-hmm. So you're playing on your own, and again, you're trying to collect sets of cards. But what the design has done is, unlike set collection games where if it was a standard deck of cards, if you like, mm-hmm. each one of those habitats would be like a suit, and then each of the birds would be like the numbers 2, 3, 4,
okay.
You know, Jack, Queen, King, Ace. But what Teal's cleverly done is changed the frequency of those numbers, or the frequency of the birds within each habitat. Mm-hmm. So some birds become rarer and some birds become more common.
Yeah.
So seeing, and that's a wonderful thing, and he's kind of captured that thing about going out into the environment and spotting birds. You mm-hmm. could see something rare, or you could see something common, and the common birds will pop up every, you know, more often. And if the rare birds appear in the habitats when you're not visiting that habitat, you've kind of missed your chance to go visit them. So it's this wonderful, so there's a lot of luck involved at times, but it's that kind of game. It plays, you know, 15 minutes, you'll play a game, and then you can redeal, play a game. So it's that kind of game. It's wonderful to play and lots of fun to play, but it's a clever little design element in how to make those simple mechanisms suddenly feel deeper. And it feels like and it's a nice tie into the theme, because it feels like you've spotted a rare bird or you've spotted a common bird.
Yeah.
Yeah, really nice. So for people who like Wingspan, you know, you've got that kind of theme where you're going out and spotting birds in these wonderfully drawn images.
Yeah, and actually, like, I was looking into the Kickstarter page right now, and I want to show it to you to the camera here. They just sent me recently a nice deck of cards from the game that I started exploring the art and everything. The art is beautiful. Even if this is a prototype version of the game, the art is beautiful. You have different type of birds, like Ricky was mentioning, on more based on the certain region, I guess, of the United States. Snowy egret, I hope I pronounced it correctly. The belted kingfisher, the white-headed woodpecker, spotted towhee, the prairie falcon. This one I don't know how to pronounce it. I will skip it. Mountain chickadee, the brown creeper. Gray crown, rosy finch, common yellow throat, common poor whale. And they come in different suits, like he was mentioning. Like, I guess the suits will be like one feather, two feather, one egg, one sort of like a claw. And they have, you know, on the cards at the bottom also, the different, as well, color of the suit, I guess, and the title of the name of the bird or the species of the bird as well. So that's very cool, and a lot of detail. So if birds is something that definitely you are interested on, that would be this could be a great opportunity. You mentioned Wingspan, which has been a huge success, and it's in big part, I think, is because of the theme, how relaxing it is. Even if, for example, I don't know anything about bird watching or anything like that, when I play Wingspan, I mean, it's very relaxing and enjoyable at the same time, because the components are beautiful, the theme is beautiful. I mean, I went that far to get the neoprene mats and expansions, you know, with some of them was sent to me very kindly by Jamie Stegmaier from Stonemaier Games. But it has that theme that even if you don't know too much about it, you know, it's just an enjoyable theme and a relaxing theme that it's okay sometimes to have. I mean, not everything has to be about Cthulhu and you know, and chaos and the end of the world. I mean, sometimes also to enjoy the nature and the world, it's a nice theme. The other positive thing on the Kickstarter is right now you can, well, if you subscribe to the Late Pledge to get on the Pledge Manager, you will be able to get the game, which, once again, I wish I could show it to you. I will put some pictures in our Instagram, SoloBG Podcast, and Facebook. You will get 60 bird cards, one score sheet, the rule book, and all that you will get it for $20 American. If you do if you subscribe to the Late Pledge, and then you go into the Pledge Manager, of course, plus shipping, the retail price should be $22, so you will be able to save something there. And it's one of those games that, once again, I always enjoy when I can see accessible games on Kickstarter that they're not the classic, $400 with shipping, you know, pledge and whatever. Like, this is nice. And it's a very nice theme. Once again, the art is beautiful, at least for what I see here on the cards, what I see on the Kickstarter page. And I will post those pictures soon on our social media as well. So talking about Let's of Feather once again, Birds of Feather, are you a huge fan of bird watching or something like that because of the beautiful art that I see on the back of your room?
Yeah, I've always loved nature and wildlife. So, not a bird watcher, but yeah, you spotted my, the old tea cards that are on the wall.
Nice.
But anything with that theme, obviously I've been playing Ark Nova because I enjoy anything with the wildlife theme. Mm-hmm. I mentioned Cascadia earlier as well. Mm-hmm. And Birds of a Feather, which what initially attracted me to its game, and then developed the Solar Rules, which Snowbite Studio have. So they've kind of updated, it's the same artwork, I think, but they've updated the graphic design. Mm-hmm. They've refined the rule book as well. So they've done a few little changes and made a few little tweaks, but it's pretty much the same game. But any of those games, I did some solo rules for a game called Ecosystem by Matt Since, has produced Genius Games. Genius Games love produce wonderfully beautiful games. So they're putting together a game called Ecosystem. It's getting a re-release, Coral Reef. So Ecosystem was like woodland kind of environment. This is Ecosystem Coral Reef, which I think is coming possibly third quarter, fall, your time. Mm-hmm. So that's look out for that. Will have solo rules built in, which I did for them. And again, it's got beautiful artwork by Mazur Schumacher. Mm-hmm. But anything with that kind of artwork really draws me in. Like, I love Beth Sobel's work, that kind of artwork. It's great. Yeah. I'm working on my next game. Mm-hmm. So a lot of what I do is collaborations, but my next game will also be kind of wildlife themed.
Okay.
So that's coming possibly next year. That's with Blaze Games. They're a publisher in the UK.
Okay.
But I love those themes because it's like Wingspan, so I'm a big fan of Wingspan as well. Mm-hmm. The theme, like you say, is just something that is wonderful to relax with. Yeah,
yeah.
But I mean, I like getting outdoors with my dog, and I was brought up with animals around me as a child, you know, pets and birds and all sorts. So yeah, it's always nice. So I'm a keen fan of the old nature.
So one thing I also want to mention about the pledge before we keep moving to other projects is that as I'm scrolling through the Kickstarter page, there are some cool things that you can get for the retail price, which I'm sorry, the saving price that you will do if you do the late pledge for Birds of Feather, is that you will get the basic game, but also they have the Flock Together, which with $36 American you can get the base game and another game that you can, of course, give as a gift for someone else. It's going to be an app that will help as well, to assist the game, I guess, on the solo aspect, it seems like. Then you can get also the rare sighting. This is for if you're a huge fan of bird watching, which is everything from it's a bird, bird stickers, print art, whimsical wooden apostle that they will send you as well that you can do if you like as well. So there's a lot of nice things that if you're, a bird person, you can always jump in. So check it out. Once again, Birds of a Feather, it's currently on Let's Pledge. You can go through the Kickstarter website and find out more about the game. Now, future projects, Ricky, future projects. There's some that, I'm very interested to hear about it. You were spoiling us a little bit right now. But upcoming projects, and also another game that I mentioned at the beginning of the episode that it was by your design, Renegade. It's hard to find, so hard to find, because I remember I played it, like I said, probably a year and a half ago, and I've been trying to track one copy down. Do you know where our amazing listeners can try to, find a copy, I guess? Do you know any?
No, unfortunately, it's out of print now.
So okay.
It's been out of print for quite some time. So Victory Point Games got acquired by Tabletop Tycoon. So okay. Tabletop Tycoon picked up the rights to the game. Tabletop Tycoon are re-releasing.
Okay.
But it will be under a new title. So you'll know Tabletop Tycoon because they're an umbrella company for other companies. One of their biggest hit is with a publisher called Starling Games, who produced Everdell.
Yeah, yeah. Which
was cute little animals. So they have a massive hit on their hands with Everdell. So, you know, my guess is that they're focusing on that, but I don't know. It's kind of in their hands at the minute, but it's going to be re-released.
Okay.
The world's publishing has slowed down a little bit, you know, with delivery costs and then the pandemic and everything else. So things have really slowed down. I mean, it was originally released in 2019, then it was 2020, 21, 22. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see where it goes. But I contact them every now and again and say, how's it going? And yeah, we're good, Ricky. Everything's good. Yeah, now the game's coming. The game's coming. Mm-hmm. I don't know when, but look out for it. it will be retitled Deckers.
Okay.
Renegade was a name I chose. It's not a name that we can use any further, but Deckers kind of felt like it fitted because it's a deck building hacking game. Mm-hmm. And Deckers is kind of a nickname for those cyberpunk hacking guys. And it was a deck building game as well, so it kind of fitted nicely. But when I originally designed Renegade, it was differently themed anyway. It was kind of a historical game. So the game is very heavily based upon its mechanisms, but it lended itself well to the transformation to a hacking game and cyberpunk game. It did mean I did have to change quite a lot of it to kind of bring the game from this wide scope to this kind of claustrophobic world of hacking. And through development, it's not a game I recognized when I first designed it. But Deckers is going to be the same as Renegade. So if you buy Deckers, you can play it with Renegade. You know, you could. The aim is that we'll have expansions in that will be compatible with people who own Renegade. I mean, the only thing with the name on is the box. So
yeah, and are you going to be involved in the expansions? To your knowledge, so far?
Oh yeah, they're 100% done. That's all been done. It's been done for some time. So mm-hmm. I mean, this is the trouble. If you leave a game with a designer for too long, they start tweaking it. So yeah. It has over the time. I mean, every now and again, I go back and go, I'm going to change that. Tabletop Tycoon employed a guy called Tyler Allender who helped me develop Renegade to develop the new remaster, if you like. Mm-hmm. The rule book's getting a rewrite. I think that was something that a lot of folks struggled with, was the rule book. So I've kind of done a walkthrough, a very thematic story, you know, your new recruits coming into a training room and you're going to teach you how to play. For people who are new, and then the separate rule book will be more a very concise, no lingo, no none of that. It's just be all, you know, icons and images and pictures and very matter of fact and precise. Mm-hmm. It's that kind of game. I mean, I designed Renegade as a game for me. It was a game for me, it's what we call, I don't know, you probably won't know what I mean, but it's a little bit Marmite is what we say. You'll either love it or you'll hate it. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people love it and a lot of people hate it, which is great. It's fantastic because my idea of, I don't design games as my income, right? This is not how I put bread on the table. Okay. So it's purely a passion, and unlucky is this is a hobby for me. So what that means is I can be a little bit self-indulgent when it comes to, I can afford for my designs to fail a little bit, but it also means that I can be a little bit more choosy. And when I do collaborations, like with Birds of a Feather, it was great because it was, I've not done a set collection, let's do a set collection. And like with Ecosystem, it's like a tile laying game, I've not done that before. You know, so I can I can just try and do something new.
Yeah.
You mentioned John Company, which is one which just finished and is going into production shortly. It's a negotiation game. You know, people are saying you can't do a solo rules for negotiating game, and that was just laying down the gauntlet for me. You know, I'm like, yes, I can. Let's do it. So I see those things as a challenge, really. Yeah, I don't know where I was going. I lost my train of thought. So Deckers is going to be it's kind of lots of different mechanisms. But if you won't get a copy of Renegade except for on secondary market, but Deckers will have it's basically a re-release, the same thing. So with some extra content.
Just to wait a little bit longer, and my friends, we should be able to get our hands in that Ricky Royal game, which it's interesting as you were answering the question, you that's something that is right and it comes to mind as well. You see all these content creators, which is fine. You know that they create either content for solo gaming or just like playthroughs or reviewers. But this is my impression, and you can tell me if I'm wrong. You know, I see from all the ones that I follow, which once again you were the first one that I started follow. I see that people tend to be very engaged, you know, with social media and you know, they show you a little bit more about their lives and you know, and videos here and there and whatever. But with the format that you have, which we only see your hands literally and the game, and your smooth voice, it seems like, at least that's my impression, that you were different. Like you are like more like, okay, this is the video and that's it. Like you're not very engaged probably. And that's what I could be wrong. And you told me otherwise. Seems like you're not engaged. I mean, you're probably try to keep it way more private. Am I correct? Like more like, you know, like, okay, this is the video, this is the game, I'm playing with you, and kind of like, that's it. Like you were mentioning, like, when I design, it's more about the passion rather than, you know, getting a profit of it. And I think that's also very important. And sometimes you can tell, almost like in every art, if we put the board gaming solo designing in at the same category as an art, which I think it is, it's almost like in every art, like, you have, you know, different type of people that they're more encouraged from the profit aspect of it, and the product will be, at the end, will be in a way. But then you have people that they really don't care about that. They just care about the art and the passion from it, and then the result is different. Does it make sense what I'm trying to go with this? Now, is that the right concept that I have, you know, with you, or do you think otherwise?
Well, it's an observation. I don't know what motivates other people, so I won't. Mm-hmm. I can't speak to that. What I do know is, a lot of people do a much, much better job than I do in front of the camera. So it's, there's so many wonderful people doing videos. I mean, I don't have as much time to watch YouTube now, so I don't know. I know there's a lot of great content, fantastic content. I couldn't come anywhere near to the quality of output that other people produce. I mean, look at Paul Grogan from Gaming Rules and what he does and how he presents. If you want to learn to play a game, go and watch him. If you suffer from insomnia, come and watch me. I'll help you sleep. But it's, yeah, the difference is that I don't produce as much output, and I'll show you something when I want to show you something. And I, because I'm in that luxury of a position. And then a lot of times you don't see me. I mean, for my videos aren't about me, they're about the game. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I will. I mean, I'm not afraid to put myself in front of the camera if I need to. So, for example, I just did a video for a Kickstarter, which is coming on Tuesday, which is still, I'm getting a plug in now, which is still Colosseum. I'm doing the solo rules for, actually not solo, it's solo co-op rules. So we'll talk about that. But I put myself in front of the camera at the beginning of that video because it was a little bit about me, because I helped design, you know, and develop the game. So it was a little bit about me. So I put myself in front of the camera when I feel it's a little bit about me. And like I did a top 100 solo games, when I think there was only 100 solo games that I could find. and then it was about my choices. So I put myself in front of the camera. So I just kind of see it that way. You kind of should kind of write, I don't care whether I get you know, I'm happy if I get one view. I don't care if I get 10,000 views or one view. Yeah. I'm just happy that somebody is. It's more about me sharing something. It's an excuse to share it with people, I guess.
Yeah.
And again, it is a fortunate position, but yeah, so many people are doing great stuff now. I mean, in those 10 years, I don't think my technology hasn't improved much. I do edit heavily, which is something that I do, but I just do it because that's what I do.
Yeah.
But you know, I've seen other people come along in leaps and bounds with, you know, great graphics and stylish delivery. Those sorts of things are not me. So it doesn't matter. I'm not trying to, influence anyone, I guess, but just say, come and have a look at this wonderful game and I'll show it to you.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be just something I like. But does that answer?
Yeah. And as an observation, I would have to say that, in my opinion, as a, you know, as a gamer and as a consumer of your content, I'm sorry, I think, and I don't have any, you know, any afraid to say that that's what makes you different, that, you know, you get the perception of, you know, as a consumer as well, that, you know, that yes, someone is doing a great content and someone is doing a great playthrough and teaching you, but there's also the part of like, okay, of course, and who knows, maybe they want to do that for a living, or they're doing that for a living, and there's the need of that revenue of like, okay, I need more subscribers, I need more views, I need more this, more that. But with you, it just feels more like literally like I'm having someone next to me or observing someone next to me that is playing and telling me the story. So I think you should keep on that path, because that's great.
Thanks, sir.
Yeah. Now, talking about the upcoming project as well, I want another question that I had, and this is just like very quick question. I know it's going to be a quick answer, and I know probably it's going to come on your... I read it recently on an interview. I think it's for the upcoming project that we're going to talk about it as well. The name Ricky Royal, and we were talking about before we started the interview that, you know, that you're huge into sports and all that stuff. Do you want to tell us more, just in case of like people are like, well, why, if his name is Richard Wilkins, why will he choose to go to Ricky Royal? Is it because of the Port Royal, the board game, or what is it about it? So why I don't let you answer that question?
Okay. The thing is, I didn't choose that name. I don't think I did. I think it was you guys that chose that name. It's, you know, when you start the YouTube channel, you have to put like a handle.
Yeah,
and I wish I put something else. Maybe I don't know. Maybe I don't. But I put Ricky, and I'm a baseball fan. I was working out in Kansas City for a while, and I went to watch the Royals play the Yankees. I think was my first game. The Yankees were in town, and you know, it was A-Rod and Derek Jeter and Randy Johnson at the mound, but the Royals swept them. You know, we had Mike Sweeney behind the plate. It was great fun. I loved it.
Mike Sweeney was great.
I fell in love with the Royals. So when I was choosing my, it was around that time. I've been supporting them for nearly 20 years now.
Mm-hmm.
But then I'd written Ricky, and then I put Casey Royal or something like that, I think, as my YouTube handle. And then everyone started saying Ricky Royal. And that was just how it became, because I didn't have a channel name. I was like, saying, no, I'm not Ricky Royal. I'm Box of Delights. But everyone kept saying Ricky Royal, so I just took it, and that was that. It's funny, when I did the solo rules for Tony Boydell on Guilds of London, and he said, right, we'll put the credits together. And I said, yeah, put Richard Wilkins. He went, oh, no, I don't want that guy. I want Ricky Royal. So he put Ricky Royal in the credits as well. So everyone wants to put Ricky Royal in the credits. But I'm slowly persuading people to use my real name when I'm doing serious work, you know.
Yeah, sure. Well, yeah, and I guess at this point people do recognize you now, you know, as the three different ways, you know, either Box of Delights, Richard Wilkins, Ricky Royal. I think, you know, the people, especially the people that we have been following you since the beginning, kind of, you know, I jumped late. I didn't jump into 2012. I jumped later than that. But like still like in early stages, we kind of identify any of those ways of, you know, approaching you. And that's why I put a lot of emphasis at the beginning, you know, look for Box of Delights, just in case if you're like, you know, in Google, like Ricky Royal, probably would throw you there anyway, but just look for Box of Delights and you can check him out on YouTube and Facebook as well. Now, the upcoming project you were talking about, the upcoming game, tell us more about it, because I'm excited. I'm excited to hear about it.
So that's launching on 17th of May.
Okay.
which is next Tuesday. I don't know when you're...
Yeah, probably this will be aired like by either Sunday, Monday, or either Tuesday. So if you're listening this and it was just released on the Kickstarter day, just go for it. I don't know if it's going to be Kickstarter, GameFound, which crowdfunding platform are you using?
It's going to be on Kickstarter, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's published by Zatu Games. And Zatu are... They're known in the UK as a board game shop, not a retailer, mm-hmm. A distributor. But this will be their first published game. So it's great to be on board with them at the beginning. It's a game designed by James Hewitt and Sophie Williams, who did kickstart this years ago, but the game's taken a lot of redevelopment. It's got wonderful new artwork. It's still, did I say the name? Still Colosseum. I don't know if I said the name.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's an arena game where you're battling robots against robots.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And you're using a deck of control cards. And there's lots of different layers to this game. So they invited me to join them to work on, well, they initially said solo rules, mm-hmm. But it's ended up being a different mode of play actually. So because what I realized was once we had remote controlled robots that mm-hmm. you could fight against, you could throw them into a co-op game or even your PvP game.
Yeah.
So players are controlling robots in a battling arena. And you can also have these remotely controlled robots, which is what I've designed, that you can put into your multiplayer games, in co-op games. You can form a co-op team with another player and take on these house robots. They're called drones, right? They're remotely controlled drones. They're wonderfully 3D printed miniatures for your robots. I think we're using tokens actually for the drones.
Okay.
Because I needed stats on them, and you can't do that with miniatures, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I needed that. I needed them to be tokens. But it was wonderful. So I'm kind of elbows deep in that right now. It's also on my table right now. And so the design's done, and I'm kind of in the thick of development now. So development's more about just trying to get the drones working right, changing how they move, changing their weapons, balancing them and, you know, all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah,
that this takes out. It takes time. Playtesting.
Yeah.
So look out for that. It's super game. It plays pretty quickly.
Uh-huh.
Hopefully, you will see some other content creators creating some much better content than mine. I will be publishing a little preview of the solo. I call it solo, but it's called the Gauntlet mode. So it's kind of solo co-op, and you can throw these automated drones into your contests as well.
And once again, just to make sure, the name of the game, is it again?
Steel Colosseum.
Steel Colosseum. That one, it's soon to be on Kickstarter. Probably by the time you're listening, it's already on Kickstarter. So you better go and check it out. And you know, I'm gonna be backing it just because you know it's Ricky Royal, and I don't want to have any, or Richard Wilkins or Box of the Lights. I don't want to have any regret that I've had right now with with Renegade or Deckers. So please don't be like Derek and be regretting on the future. So check it out. And you know, if this is your type of game, go for it.
Thanks, Derek.
Richard, we are heading towards the end of the interview. First of all, I really want to thank you for your time. You know, this was almost like a dream come true for Solo VG Podcast and for me as well, because I knew at some point I was going to have you on the show. I hope this is not the last time that I have you on the show. After 110 episodes, we did it. So it's like a big achievement for the project.
Some other things for you. Yeah.
Yeah. So before
look out for my. So I'm going to interrupt you and say, look out for my next game as well. So Deckers was my last. And the next one's I've got a working title called Rushes. Mm-hmm. Probably next year. But I mean, it's great doing solo only collaborative work. But mm-hmm. Rushes is going to be my take on tableau building multiplayer game.
Okay.
Of course, it will have a solo mode. Of course, it will. But I love tableau building too, like Race for the Galaxy and games like that.
Mm-hmm.
So look out for that. And it's going to be your tableau is going to be a wildlife documentary film. Potentially, we could have other themes, but you build up a tableau of cars that make up your film, and my idea was to have a game that did tableau building multiplayer, but made it highly interactive. So not multiplayer solitaire, but lots of there's no take that. So you're not destroying each other's films, but you're competing to travel the world, to take the best shots, to create the best film, to capture the biggest audience. So it's going to be a competitive tableau building game. Yeah.
Wow.
You know, I got my little plug-in.
We will have, and I will ask you for this right now. I know we will talk it behind the scenes, but I would love to have an episode, you know, with you about that game, because I have to confess that my dream job have always was been to, you know, to work into the filmmaking industry on right. the editing and production behind the scenes type of things. So when you're talking about documentary and a tableau of different, you know, how you're going to be developing and all this stuff, I mean, that's right up my alley. So I'm looking forward to have an episode about it, you know, and talk about that. Will give me, or that will give us a good excuse to meet again, at least through technology, and talk about many other things that we can talk. I have two questions for you, though. I'm going to go for the first one. What is your favorite game and why that you haven't designed, or you haven't had any involvement in design? Like, I want to know, since the beginning until now, you know, it could be a all-in Kickstarter, whatever it is. I want to know which one is your favorite game. And I want you to focus not only on, you know, this game works great in mechanics and from the designing standpoint. I want your impression as a whole experience. Like, it could be the storytelling experience, the cinematic experience, the way that it made you feel, how the adventure ended, how the story ended or began or whatever. Just take all that in consideration. And tell us okay. your favorite game as a solo gamer.
Okay, as a solo gamer. Okay. Oh, you've put me on the spot now, Derek. Well, you know what? The standard answer is it's the game that's on my table right now. But you said it's not allowed to be one I'm involved in. So
that's correct.
Yeah, it's really hard. I mean, a lot of people say to me, Ricky, where's your updated top ten solo games? I'm conflicted because when you start designing and working with other designers, it kind of feels a little bit sneaky to start judging other people's sure. work. So I'm always a little bit reluctant. So maybe I will do that one day. But in terms of, I mean, it's always nice to say good things about people's work. So
yeah.
For a long time, Hoblomachus has been my number one.
Mm-hmm.
Hoblomachus from Chip Theory Games. And they are releasing Hoplomachus Victorum. And I had the pleasure of doing a little Kickstarter for them.
Yeah.
They've done a lot of work on it. So I think that's going to be my number one for quite a long time when it comes.
Mm-hmm.
In the last 12 months, I've really been enjoying Ark Nova. Mage Knight has always been my... I was invited to kind of write for a magazine and say, what's your favorite game? And the title was my favorite game. And it was, and I wrote all about Mage Knight. So that's probably the game. I mean, more recently I've been playing Too Many Bones loads, also from Chip Theory Games. That game tells a wonderful story. Yes, every time you play it, it's a completely new story. So, oh my goodness. You know, it's a tough one because today it's this and tomorrow it's that.
I know.
Yeah, you can't make me pick. Do you have to make me pick one?
The one that you're going to take, for example, if you were to ask me, like, Derek, which would it be your one as everything, the whole thing of the game, today I would choose Nemesis, for example, just because the experience that it brings every time to me, and because the rituals, the collateral rituals that I put into play when I play the game. Right. But you're right, something tomorrow it could be other one, and that's it. Tomorrow it could be, once again, one of my dearest loves, which is Robinson Crusoe. So, you know,
yeah, I don't know. I love Robinson Crusoe.
Yeah.
I love that too. Yeah.
But if you have to pick one today that you will take with you and you will enjoy for a month, just that game.
Okay. That would probably, if it was one game that I could only play it solo, I would probably take Mage Knight still. Mage I think the puzzle that it creates and the story it tells. It's probably not the most. The theme is probably something that is its least strongest point for me. But in terms of mechanisms and how it creates a puzzle that I can really get stuck into.
Yeah.
Then yeah, that's probably the one I'll
take. Mage Knight is the champion for this episode. And now the second question, this one has nothing to do, and I wanted to make it this way, nothing to do with the board games, but it has to do with Richard Wilkins.
Okay.
We have been putting a lot of emphasis, you know, and making sure that, yes, Ricky Royal, that's how we became, the story. Box of Delights, the channel. But this is a question for Richard Wilkins. And I think this will also be good for me, and I'm sure amazing listeners, you will appreciate it as well. Richard Wilkins, recommend us something from the hobbies that you have, which in this case I can see clearly that is music, one of them, since I see your guitar in the background. It has a nice black acoustic guitar, or I think it's electroacoustic. No, I think it's electroacoustic. Electroacoustic, yeah. So you have a nice electroacoustic guitar over there in the background, black. You have a nice pictures, you know, some seems like some family pictures or probably from a gig picture. And it has a nice turntable over there. And I'm a huge vinyl person as well, you know. I love going to the vinyl shops and get old vinyls. You know, anyway, most of the current artists that I follow, they still release on albums, and I get their albums as well on vinyl format. Recommend this from that particular hobby of music, a good album, one of your favorite top albums that we should all go and listen to. I know it could be very ambiguous because it could be very different genres, different categories of music, and some people like certain categories or not. But what will be an album that it will be on your top five albums ever?
Okay.
That's for Richard Wilkins.
One album. So my taste is that the picture you saw in the background, that was probably, it's not a family picture, that's probably a vinyl. Mm-hmm. That's the latest Wet Leg. I think that was their debut album.
Yeah.
So yeah, eclectic. I mean, I'm a big Stax, Vault, Motown, Atlantic, all that kind of old stuff. So I like Otis Redding and old things. But probably, oh my gosh, one album.
The one that you're taking with Mage Knight.
Probably. Oh my gosh. Let me think. You're going to ask me these tough questions?
Oh yeah. Some of them they came right away, and that's the beauty of doing the podcast this way, as some of you amazing listeners, you know, that I do this almost like if we are live. And, you know, I edit the lesson that way you can get that experience as well. Like if you are with Richard and me at the table. Like right now, for example, I will tell you my favorite album. And I know this is going to sound a very cliche, but I will probably choose. I've been listening to recently a lot of The Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd. Yeah, just because I believe that there are certain albums that, you know, I believe that when an artist make an album, you have to listen to the album in the order that it was made. Because most of the time, that's the way that the artist wanted it. And Dark Side of the Moon, I think it's a perfect example that you have to listen it, you know, in order for you to appreciate and enjoy, you know, the whole changes in rhythm and changes in mood and lyrics and all that good stuff. But I know it's a very cliche because it's probably the most famous album from Pink Floyd. I Wish You Were Here that's another great album as well. But just to throw you some examples and some ideas as well.
Well, I was thinking, Pink Floyd might have been up there. Bowie might have been up there.
Mm-hmm.
I think possibly the album. Yeah, because that's one thing that we've lost today with downloads and the shuffle, right? Mm-hmm. We've on the media recently, we've been talking about the demise of the iPod or the end of the iPod and the way it introduced the shuffle. Mm-hmm. And it kind of was the end of the album that. But it wasn't. I mean, my son is a big vinyl fan. I've took great pleasure in teaching him, showing him
mm-hmm.
Vinyl. And he's gone off and found all sorts of music that I never knew existed and now shows me stuff. But one album I would probably be The Wild, The Innocent, and The E Street Shuffle, Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, yeah. Finished. Yeah.
There's probably one that I listen to as an album.
That's a great album, yeah.
And it's got tons of different moods, and I can listen to every song over and over. That would be, I think I'd say that.
Well, then we're gonna have to combine a night with Mage Knight and Bruce Springsteen and some wine, and we will let ourselves and go into all that wild and crazy adventure. Once again, Richard, I'm so happy and so thankful that you took your time to be with us. Really quick, any upcoming conventions that you're going this year?
UK Games Expo is coming up, but unfortunately it's always that time of year and I can't be there. So no, nothing planned convention wise.
What about Gen Con? Are you coming to Gen Con?
No, it's a long way to come.
Come on. Think about it.
I need someone who lives close with a sofa. That might be.
Yeah, well, there you go. I told you this, like, and as some of you American listeners know, that I live like literally 15 minutes away from conventions. I will be super happy to host Ricky Royal.
That would be a dream. It would be a dream to come visit the States. I've only been a few times. And when's Gen Con?
Gen Con, it's going to be the first weekend of August. Let me go right now into the amazing Google advertising.
And we're heading into postseason baseball as well.
So. Yeah, that's true. You see, you can come and then we can go and watch a game. We can probably go and watch the Cubs since they're like 3 hours away from here. Or we can go and watch the Cardinals in Louis, Missouri. It's 3 hours and a half from here as well. Or
nearby.
Yeah. Or the Reds, Cincinnati. It's like an hour and a half. Gen Con is going to be Thursday, August the 4th to Sunday, August the 7th. So, awesome. Think about it. There you go. I know a lot of people, including myself, they will be very happy to see you at one of their future conventions. Once again, thank you so much, Richard, for your time on this episode. And amazing fans, I will see you in the next time. And like always, remember, see you through the speaker and at the tabletop. Drink tequila, spend summer at a Mexican bar. Stephen Austin, Davy Crockett, and I'm driving my car. Simple and I'm making it hard. Maybe I should separate my brain from my heart. Drove my motorcycle, breathe fumes on I-65. Every time I think about death, I feel alive. South of the border, you won't have to try. Texas roads, nowhere left to go. Texas road, nowhere left to go.